So we would like to start this evening program today by a little reflection, and then we'll see, because what will happen next, no one knows, actually. So the thing that we would like to start with is a kind of question that came to me many times, and this question is if it's possible to find some kind of balance between our inner wisdom and somehow the ability to find this inner wisdom or to connect with. And on the other hand, this pattern or this necessity sometimes to look out for food, to look out for words, for wisdom that comes from others. For example, this looking out for words coming from the teachers, or words coming from the book, for example. So we will work a little bit with this balance. It is possible that we find a balance, an inner balance, between being ready to speak from the wisdom and at the same time being able and always open to hear, to be listening other words or other teachings coming from nature or anyone that can help open to us. So in this sense, I like to relate this question with a question that came yesterday during the inquiry. And the question is somehow, Is it possible to move out if there is some kind of non-resolved emotion inside? Or in other words, is it possible again to find this place of wisdom, even though we know that we are not perfect, we are not finished, whatever that means, I don't know, but even knowing that we are not finished, is it possible to speak from that place? And also, the other thing that we will work with today is the art of listening. But listening with the whole being. Not only listening, and at the same time that we are kind of listening the other person, telling to ourselves, oh, I know already what this person is saying, or finding an answer, a better answer for this person. But listening, being really connected, listening from this place that can hold everything, that can really welcome the other person. Not only the words that the other person is saying, but the whole intention, the whole wisdom, and see this heart speaking, this wisdom coming from this quiet place that just moves, that just creates the words, and the words happen. So I think finding this inner place from where it's possible to speak and from where it's possible to really, truly, fully listen, we are following the Dharma. We are sitting in the Dharma. Sometimes people have an extraordinary amount of curiosity about teachers, and especially how did they get up there? They look like they're 13 years old.
No.
Not anymore. At least not me. Today in our staff meeting, we were talking about the practice of being in the kitchen, the practice of being a manager, and the practice of being a teacher, and what our different experiences were. And what does it mean, what is it like to be a teacher? And it strikes me that the main thing in being a teacher is listening. And I keep getting some kind of a message that's a little bit of an urgent message at this point. That's what it feels like. Somehow, a springtime message. That listening is one of the things that has the power to heal all of this misfortune that we're causing ourselves. So sitting here or walking across the dry rocks that used to be bubbling, molten rock, however many millions of years ago today, we were walking on what used to be the edge of a volcano. Allowing the body to listen to the earth and the earth to listen to the body. It's almost like, it's a lot like letting the body and the earth make love to each other. And it's interesting spending all of this time in silence together here. And when we speak of this phantom, this kind of ghost, what's a ghost in Hebrew?
Ruah.
This ghost of daily life that we pretend is different from what's going on here in our heads. One of the main differences in what we do is that here we're not talking much, I hope. And over there, we're usually talking quite a lot more than we might really want to. And it's such a powerful practice, listening. Without any answer ready in the mind. Being very alert to the parts of ourselves that are jumping ahead to what we're going to say. Being very aware of self-consciousness. What's that in Hebrew? Someone?
We don't get sleep.
Embarrassment, basically. Basically, embarrassment to be. There's one teacher who talks about being aware of what happens to us when we either see ourselves in a mirror, or we hear ourselves, our voice that's been recorded, or we see ourselves in photo or video. And usually we say, oh, that's not me. This embarrassment to be is actually ego. We like to think that ego is just that part that's trying to get to the tea table first, as soon as the meditation is over or whatever. But the really destructive body, the main body of ego, is this embarrassment to be. Being very alert to that, having a kind of a golden, warm connection with the lower abdomen, for example, or with a sense of just being. Is that possible, and what would it be like to live with that connection, overriding the embarrassment, even if we are talking to another person or listening to another person? The embarrassment is what jumps in to impress the other person, or to put the other person down, or becomes preoccupied with how much better or worse we are than the other. So we're actually going to let you all give the Dharma talk this evening, so that you can have a chance to walk through the wall, if you wish, of embarrassment. And you're not required to say anything interesting. But there's a suggestion to listen and speak to each other. The main point of this particular kind of Dharma talk is to have a chance where it's a very real experience that we need to contain our response to what's going on. To contain our response of liking or not liking what's happening. Liking or not liking the person in front of us. So we'll get into a different shape, and I'll tell you how. And then we'll explain more. So if we could just go around the circle calling out A, B, A, B, all the way around, please.
B.
B. Remember your letter. If the A's would come and sit inside looking at the B's. So the A sits in front of the person on your left. If you're a B, you're just sitting still. If you're an A, you're moving to the left and turning around.
So just to whoever's wondering, I fell down today. Nobody hit me. So far. So that's why my eye is bruised. What comes to me, first of all, when thinking about generosity and about working on the retreat, is that I feel that working on this retreat was a huge act of generosity towards myself, first of all. It has been such a beautiful, powerful experience. I don't really have the words. It has been no less a retreat for me than sitting a retreat. And I mean, there's so much I could say about it, and yeah. Me and Sigal were talking about how wishing we could just go on like this forever. And some people do, actually. But even if you can't do it forever, I really do recommend doing it for a week here and there when you can manage to. Just the power of, first of all, just the power of being in interaction and working alongside with being all the time in the context of this practice and the teachings. It just makes such a powerful, it brings so much power and depth into understanding the teachings and understanding the practice. And I expect that everybody has had their own individual experience here during this week. But for me, I mean, I love these teachings so much, and I feel that there's something so precious happening here and happening in these retreats and happening in these gatherings of people that come to practice and to practice just, you know, just looking inside and just having I feel really privileged to be able to work on a retreat and help enable that to happen. And yeah, I really, really recommend it. So yes, that's it. Thank you.
I don't know how many things do you know in this world that are not happening because the money. To me, it seems like almost everything has this thing beyond, or at least beyond, but many times just in front. The first thing is money, and then whatever. So the way how all this history, all this retreat that we held together is kind of a magic way. Is a little big thing that is happening in the world right now. All of us here sitting, eating, practicing, sleeping, and still in all these days nothing about money. For me, it's really a beautiful thing. This fact of being here, out of the business way of life or the business way of thinking. And at the same time, it's a challenge of not acting only because the individual wanting or the individual need, but just out of generosity, out of this dream or wish that the teachings can touch many hearts and can transform the life of many, many people. And when I say teachings, you already know, especially after this Dharma talk that you just got, that I'm not referring only what comes out of the mouth of what we call teachers, but everyone. So if what comes out of your mouth, all this wisdom you can bring out of this retreat situation, seems to me that this wisdom and this generosity basically that we are learning, first generosity with ourselves, the simple fact that we are here, this huge generosity of giving to ourselves these 5-6 days is just amazing. So this way of practicing or cultivating the openness or cultivating this clear seeing that can make the world really different, seems to me that this experiment that is happening right here this day is kind of a little powerful thing that we can bring out, we can expand out everywhere. And also this kind of giving out, when you will go out of the retreat situation, it happened by joy. And I really wish that this giving of the wisdom or this giving from this inner place happen from the joy. And how beautiful it is to work here together without the limitation of knowing the price, without the limitation of someone telling us how much it costs to be here, how much it costs to go inside, to find which is your wish for your life and for everyone. How much it costs to find a way to heal this child or this pain that we all have somewhere. How much it costs a hot drink when it's really cold. A I haven't seen for a long time a table just always open, always with hot water, with that many different kinds of coffee and herbs. And I mean, coming from India is kind of a arriving to the paradise, you know. Wow, what's this? I enjoyed a lot experimenting, you know. This kind of coffee, strange coffee with that caffeine that I don't know really what is, but it's really good. And all these herbs that I don't know who is picking these herbs and putting in that table, but it's amazing. You put this little leaf in your hot water, it becomes another extremely different thing. So tell me, like, if you have seen a table like this, or we are more used to see a kind of these robots, like these machines that you put the coin, and if you are lucky, after the coffee comes, in the best of the cases. Many other times, you know what happened. So, this dana, that we call, dana means generosity in Pali, and the adventure of living on dana, and the adventure of make the retreats happening by dana, is not only an idea or a beautiful thing to do. It's more like a dream or a powerful thing that I think that can put life into the world, can suggest many other things. By doing this in dana, only by your heart, I think it's a great lesson, for every one of us and for many other people. So as you have seen, a lot of energy is put already here, even before all of us arriving here. A lot of energy, the managers, all the kitchen staff, many days thinking and preparing and buying things, everyone like taking out the money from their own pocket to make this happening without knowing really if the money will come back. Just putting. And it's not a putting like asking for something. It's a putting because the dream, and the dream doesn't know about numbers. Just believe that, just fall into that, follow that, and that's all. And then whatever happened, happened. And if we cannot come back to at home by plane, so maybe we can go by bicycle, I don't know.
Or you can stay.
Also. So I think it's really a challenge for everyone. And in the same way that we really love to give fully, and as you have seen, we are here fully. The retreat situation doesn't leave time for other things. We are just fully here for you and also for us, because we love to do that. And we really love to continue doing that. And you know that to continue doing that, somehow, from somewhere, we have to put the hands like this and let's say, the money, but it's not really money, to pay our home in India, to pay the rent, the electricity, and all this that I really find out that it's much better to pay, because otherwise we are in trouble. So just feel free to give whatever you feel like giving, but whatever you give, give from this place and from this knowing the reality, knowing that all of us needs to eat and needs to go to the dentist sometimes. Not very far. It's true. Next week. And in the other hand, you know, the life takes care of us. So really, don't feel any pressure. We don't have anything, but somehow we are alive, and I'm sure that it doesn't depend of money. So thank you.
Kabir was a guy in India some few hundred years ago, and he was always cutting through the bullshit, basically, especially where he saw religious hypocrisy. And in this case, he has a poem, like many of his, that is addressed to a pundit, which is kind of like a rabbi or some kind of religious scholar. Asking the pundit to make the spiritual ideals a little bit more practical and in the life. It's not as hard-hitting as some of the poems are. It's very beautiful, actually. Without living beings, beings can't live. Life is the basis of life. Be kind to beings. Take care of them. Pundit, think it over. Without living beings, beings can't live. As Gemma was saying, it's so easy to get in this domination of money thinking, where we're willing to save up and pay a bunch of money to see a psychotherapist for an hour or two. Whereas if something's on offer for free, we'll take it. And we don't think about what's gone into that offering. And many times, I see around the Sangha so many, the gathering of like-minded people, the Sangha. The gathering of like-minded people. Us. So many opportunities for giving and receiving. And the Buddha talked about the power of giving. many, many times. It was actually the foundational teaching, the first thing that has to be in place before anything else can come in. And he was being approached by his stepmother, who had by hand woven some cloth for the Buddha to wear. I imagine them to be very fine, finely woven with a lot of love. Imagine that your mother, basically, the woman who has taken care of you since you were born and acted as your mother, has knitted a blanket for you and is offering it to you. And the Buddha said, actually, I'm not the one to give that to. It would be more powerful than anything else to give that to the Sangha, this community or gathering of like-minded people. The most powerful field of giving. So better than giving to a Buddha, imagine, is giving to ourselves, giving to us, supporting our ability to continue to gather this way, empowering that in every way that we can. So not just forking out the money where they tell us to, they. And just going along with that money mind. But really investing not only money but energy, and especially the creativity and inspiration, and following through with that. And what would make it more and more possible for us to gather in many different kinds of ways to support each other. It's such an amazing way, as Gemma said, to live completely on the assumption and the receptivity to generosity. I don't know how to describe it, but I can tell you that everything that I'm wearing right now is either being loaned or a gift. From this being loaned by Ariella and this by Adama, the four layers that I have under this are all gifts from different people from all over the world. My sock, my watch, everything. And I don't know if you can catch the flavor of what that is like. But I don't know, I feel strange if I have to go to the store and shop. A few years ago, I was in the States, and I decided to go and buy some underwear because I wasn't really getting... It was so strange, so overwhelming. I'd like to read a few bits of a longer piece that is a letter that was written in 1854 by a gentleman named Chief Seattle. Well, we call him that, Chief Seattle. He was the head of the Suwamish Nation in what came to be the United States. The letter is to the Great Chief in Washington. And the Great Chief in Washington had sent a letter to Seattle with friendship and goodwill, offering to buy, to purchase, to give money in exchange for the land on which Seattle and his people had been living and communing for generations. Seattle says, "We will consider your offer, for we know that if we do not sell, the white man may come with guns and take our land." The only reason he's willing to go into the money mind is because he knows he won't keep the land anyway. How How can you buy or sell the sky, the warmth of the land? The idea is strange to us. If we do not own the freshness of the air and the sparkle of the water, how can you buy them? Being most of the last 13 or 14 years in India, to be with different spiritual teachers, it's been my experience, I'm so happy and grateful to be able to say, that the teachings of awakening were considered to be and are considered to be impossible to place on any map of money mind, impossible to say the value of. And in fact, all of my teachers, all of my most influential teachers, are more likely to be trying to give me money than the other way around, because they see me with not much. So when I try to give them, they give me back. Which is sweet, which is generous, which is nice, but there's something more than that. It's a whole realm. It's a totally different realm. And in that realm, where the immeasurable is the air that we breathe, where there's not constantly measuring, it's actually the atmosphere in which the teachings can be received. And I don't think they can be received in another way. And so many people in this room have been touched by these teachings that have brought us here together. So that even the people who've been working night and day, the managers and the kitchen staff, are just doing that. On this particular retreat, there's not going to be a bowl or a box for donations to them. And they know that. And they're here anyway. Can you imagine? Even though this is my life, I can't even imagine.
Why is there not a box for them?
You can ask them tomorrow when you're out of silence. One of the reasons why is this is the beginning of building a culture of generosity and support of the Sangha and support of the retreats. And we hope that this experiment works. But to make it easier here at the beginning, as far as I can guess or understand, I also have this question, why? But I imagine that the idea is first, let's see if we can at least cover the expenses of the retreat. And then let's go from there. Another really amazing thing that most of you don't know about what's being offered here on this retreat. A couple of years ago, when Tovana, this organization that has brought us together, invited me to come and teach in Israel this year. They invited me, and I think I didn't even know Gemma at that time. And as the retreat dates came closer, and it became clear that likely to be more than enough people for one teacher, Gemma offered to come, covering her own ticket if necessary. So the ticket that that Gemma is flying here and home on is not actually officially part of the expenses of the retreat. And we're very much happy if the generosity flows and fills that bucket as well. But just to have that, the feeling of Gemma coming here, paying her own flight, being 24 hours a day fully present with us. Absolutely no way I could have done it without another teacher. And as you might have noticed, the style of our teaching with Open Dharma, with our group of teachers, is rather different. And I felt very lucky, and I felt rather strongly that it's important that you're not getting different styles at the same time, that there's a kind of harmony of the atmosphere and the presentation of the teachings. So the first step in generosity is really receiving that generosity that has already happened, that we can't erase. So we've tried to keep the expenses as low as possible so that the experiment gets off to a good start. That we're more likely to more comfortably cover the expenses of our being here. So just on the practical level, the managers will speak a little bit more about it, but basically there's two locations that you can put your donations into. One, the probably really important one on this retreat, is for the expenses of the retreat, and if possible also towards the airfare of Gemma, on top of those expenses. And another is a place where you can give donations to help us cover our ongoing expenses so that we can continue to offer retreats and devote ourselves full time to that. As you probably know, there's not a salary or something like that that we also wouldn't want to have for teaching. And as Gemma said, it's just a matter of covering our expenses, which happens. We, as Gemma said, feel incredibly taken care of, and we thank you for that. The next period of time is for some reflection on this whole kind of turning the world upside down thing that we're doing called generosity. And specifically regarding this retreat, one of the main chance to give your donations as well, but also a chance to reflect on the last days here and maybe what has been the most important moment for you, the happiest moment, the most peaceful, or the insight that you treasure the most. What feels like for you the treasure of the retreat, the wealth of the retreat. And Sigal mentioned on the first day to the staff, isn't it lovely that we have this tree in the hall? It's like our wish-fulfilling tree. We could hang our wishes on it. So several people have kindly, so beautifully, cut out little paper leaves for us on which to write our wishes. Try to say that fast, 7 times. If you wish. And to hang it on the tree. What is it that you feel is important for you that's come clearly to you here, that you wish for your life, and that you maybe also wish to send out to other human beings? It's another way of being in contact with generosity, the generous mind. So Chief Seattle seems to me to be talking about the generous mind. Every part of this earth is sacred to my people. Every shining pine needle, every sandy shore, every mist in the dark woods, every clearing and every humming insect is holy in the memory and experience of my people. So when the great chief in Washington sends word that he wishes to buy our land, he asks much of us. Whatever befalls, happens to the earth, happens to the children of the earth. People did not weave. A little louder. Algu. People did not algu the web of life. People are merely a strand in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. So just somehow finding a way that the mind could be that big, that we could enjoy that sense of wealth, that there's so much wealth it couldn't be bought by anyone. And from there, whatever you feel to give is very much appreciated financially, with your energy, with your presence, with your wishes. Moving within limits, human. Moving without limits, saint. Dropping both limits and no limits, unfathomable thought. So the managers will let us know the practical side of the money part of generosity. I'd like to mention also that tomorrow morning will be a slightly different schedule before breakfast. Getting up at 5, being generous with ourselves in the daylight. At 5:30, walking to see the sunrise over the crater. In silence. Because of the generosity and abundance of our words about generosity, we've gone much longer than we intended. So we really apologize. And just move the last sitting a bit later. From 9 to 9:30.